Actor and comedian Andy Griffith has died. Griffith was a television fixture for much of his career. The Andy Griffith Show was among the country's favorite programs in the 1960s and remains popular in reruns today. Griffith was also a movie star and recording artist. Andy Griffith died this morning at his home on Roanoke Island, North Carolina. He was 86 years old. Adam Hochberg has this remembrance.
In a career that spanned half a century, Andy Griffith starred in five different television series, made more than 30 movies, and even recorded a Grammy Award-winning gospel album. But one role defined him for generations of fans.
The Andy Griffith Show.
Griffith was 34 in 1960 when he ventured into weekly television for the first time. The result was an iconic series about an idyllic place, the fictional town of Mayberry, North Carolina, which seemed far removed from the real-life turbulence of the 60s. Griffith reminisced about the role of Andy Taylor in a 1986 NPR interview.
We never talked about it, but the backbone of the show and the thrust of the show was love, the deep regard that these people had for one another.
Opie, what in the world happened? Who did that to you?
Matt Merlis. He's my best friend.
I hate to think what he'd do if he's your enemy. You're a sight.
I suppose you tell me how you got yourself all messed up like that.
He was just wrestling, having fun.
Be young and sure have fun the hard way, don't you?
Andy Griffith's success as a comic actor came even though his first dream in life was to be a serious singer. In college, he majored in music, and as a young man, he set off for New York to audition for roles in operettas and jobs in choirs. But Griffith said the auditions failed to yield him a single offer.
Instead of being hurt, I just started to wonder, what could I do with the rest of my life? And I went home and wrote a few jokes. That summer, I did my first long monologue, and a man named Orville Campbell came up to me and said, I have a record company. Would you like to record what it was football? And I said, yeah.
Both bunches full of them men wanted this funny-looking little pumpkin to play with. And one bunch got it, and it made the other bunch just as mad as they could be. And friends, I seen that evening the awfulest fight that I have ever seen in my life.
That football monologue, released in 1953, made Griffith famous and helped propel him onto Broadway and into Hollywood. Initially, he played a variety of roles, including a maniacal wannabe politician in his debut movie, A Face in the Crowd. But he later settled into a comfortable persona as a wise Southern patriarch, a role that served him well both in his Mayberry days and on his second TV hit, the lawyer drama Matlock. Ron Howard played Opie on The Andy Griffith Show. And in a 1995 interview on WHYY's Fresh Air, Howard said Griffith brought a rare down-home honesty to their on-screen relationship.
You know, they always have the kids in situation comedies be brats. And they really are kids that, you know, you kind of think, God, somebody ought to just discipline that kid. But the Andy-Opie relationship was more of a real relationship, where when the kid gets out of line, the father does something about it. And the kid respects the father instead of being just a wise guy all the time. And it's one of the things that differentiates it from what we're accustomed to seeing on sitcoms.
Andy Griffith scaled back his TV appearances after Matlock went off the air. And freed from the burdens of weekly television, he rediscovered the singing career he dreamed of as a teenager. While in his 70s, Griffith recorded a series of gospel albums. Talking with NPR in 1996, he expressed hope that his hymns, like his TV shows, would harken back to another era.
Things have changed so much. People walked away from a simple life we had in the 20s and 30s. And I am glad that I am able to touch that period in our lives with the shows that I do and with the music that I do.
Amazing grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me.
A statue of Griffith as Andy Taylor stands in Raleigh, North Carolina, the capital of his home state. The inscription reads, "A simpler time, a sweeter place, a lesson, a laugh, a father, a son." Words that Griffith said nicely summarized the legacy he hoped to leave behind. Adam Hochberg, NPR News.
Was grace that taught my heart to fear, and grace my...
This is NPR News.
And before kicking off Pie Week, Morning Edition sponsored a pie contest here in the office. One of our winners was science editor Maria Godoy, who baked a medieval pork pie.
It was a sweet and savory dish made of ground pork and currants, dates, and honey. And then I got these dragon figurines breathing flames to sort of guard the dish.
Maria was inspired by the fantasy novel and HBO series Game of Thrones. The series conjures up a fantasy world based on medieval England, where regions and families fight for dominance. The show inspired a cookbook written by Chelsea Munro Castle and Sarianne Lear. It's called A Feast of Fire and Ice. Maria says that's where she found that pie recipe and others.
Food like sweet lemon cakes and warm pork pies and mulled wine. And the authors decided to go back into medieval cookbooks and find authentic recipes for these meals.
Maria Godoy writes for our blog, The Salt, on NPR.org. Tomorrow, we'll explore regional pies with the author of The United States of Pie. Tell us about your attachment to pie on Twitter at Morning Edition, and make sure to use the hashtag Pie Week.
Manju are Japanese sweets made from rice flour and flavored fillings. A box of manju is what you take to somebody's house on a special occasion or simply snack on with a cup of tea. As part of our local candy series, Florangela Davila of member station KPLU has the story of Seattle's manju maker.
On Saturdays, Art Oki's mom used to take him to the local sweet shop. He was 6 years old and the perfect height to stare right into the display case.
And see all the sweets and you're going, oh, that one looks good.
They sit in tidy rows and look like dumplings in all different colors. Bubblegum pink, green tea green, shiny white. They're steamed or baked. I pick one that looks like a potato called imogashi. Listen to what's in it.
Cinnamon on the outside, cake covering with white lima bean paste in the middle. I call that my Japanese version of a snickerdoodle.
When he was naming the ingredients, you heard correctly. White lima bean paste. It's sweet. There's also manju filled with red azuki beans. And if this makes you leery, Oki will slip into manju sales mode.
When I talk to people who are new to Japanese sweets or remind them, it's a little softer than gummy bears.
Yeah. It's like gooey rice, but a better consistency. It's like you get to eat like a really good Play-Doh.
Okay.
His shop is called Umaido, and it's on a street that used to cut through Seattle's old Japantown. After the sweet shop from Oki's childhood closed in the 1970s, the closest place to get manju was in Vancouver, Canada. And when that one closed, anyone traveling to California or Hawaii had manju requests.
At times, I would have to bring back like 6 dozen, so that was half my carry-ons.
Fresh manju lasts only a few days. These chewy morsels speak to Japanese tradition and nostalgia.
My mother would say, oh, I think you would like this one. I went with the plain white one and liked the bean paste, the unko inside, and got hooked on ever since.
For 30 years, Oki worked in local government as an accountant. Then he started at the bottom, apprenticing at a manju shop in L.A. where he learned the basics. He opened his store last year and is still learning from customers.
The Hawaii folks actually suggested my newest item, the chichidango, coconut milk infused into the mochi. And it just tastes like Hawaii.
And for people in Seattle, it tastes like home. For NPR News, I'm Florangela Davila.
So what's the candy that sends you back to a sweet and simpler time? Tweet your answer to us with the hashtag AmeriCandy. Or let us know on our Facebook page, Facebook.com/NPR Weekend. This is NPR News.
It's the 4th of July, a day most of us celebrate with sparklers, fireworks, and what else? Barbecue. Well, if anybody knows anything about barbecue, it's the Neelys.
We're Gina and Pat Neely. Memphis Barbecue is our family business. And when we met, honey, it was love at first bite.
That's Gina Neely, co-host of the Food Network show, Down Home with the Neelys, along with her co-host and husband of almost 20 years, Pat Neely. The duo made history on the Food Network. The show premiered as the highest-rated show in the history of the network's Saturday morning lineup, and it continues to be one of the Food Network's highest-rated shows. To top it off, Pat and Gina Neely have written two cookbooks. They own two restaurants in Memphis, Tennessee, and recently expanded their empire to the Big Apple with the opening of Neely's Barbecue Parlor in the heart of New York City. So on this 4th of July, when we figure just about everybody's out there grilling or wish they were or going to somebody's barbecue, who better to talk to than Pat and Gina Neely? And they are with us now. Welcome. Thank you both so much for joining us.
Thank you, Michelle.
Happy 4th.
Well, you know, we have to start with your story. It's one of those boy meets girl, boy loses girl, boy gets girl back 10 years later stories. So who wants to tell the story first? Gina, do you want to start?
Tell him.
Oh, okay.
So now the one we have the boy tell it, since he's the one who gained and lost.
Okay. Well, all right.
If I tell it, I have a little bit of a different memory.
Yeah. He's going to remix it, as we say on the show. He's going to remix that story.
It's pretty incredible, though. I mean, Gina and I met when we were both 15. And as I tell my daughters now that are 23 and 17, I said, when, you know, I first met your mom, our parents knew each other, and we were at open house the first day of school. And my mother and Gina's mom, they met and they hugged and they kissed. And Gina was just, she was just mesmerized by me. I mean, I was a football player. And she
oh, the fireworks beginning already. Did you see that sparkle? Okay.
But after we met and we walked away, I asked my mother, I said, who was that? And she said, oh, that was Jean. We went to school together 40 years ago. I said, I'm not talking about that old lady. I'm talking about the little thing that was beside her. And, of course, we dated through high school. And, you know, I always tell people we ended up breaking up our senior year. We never even went to the prom together.
You know, I have to ask Gina, what did he do? Because I know he did something. No bias here.
No, I know.
What did he do?
You know, I have to say that I think when, of course, when Pat and I met, we were both, like he said, we were both 15. And I was kind of this young, vibrant, wild, wanna sell my oats, crazy chick, boop, boop, you know, just being me. And he was like just kind of calm and very responsible, very just on point, knew everything, what his passion was, his goal was. And I was still kind of finding myself. So I think that was really the initial thing that sort of kind of sent us in different directions. But it's so funny because actually when Pat and I got back together at 10-year reunion, we used to have reunion meetings at the restaurant that he owned. And I don't know. I just looked at him one day and he didn't quite look the same.
So, Gina, how about the idea of, though, joining an existing family business? Was that a hard sell for you?
Watch it.
I know. You know what, Michelle? It wasn't hard sell because I was in corporate America, and I'm a person that's sort of used to kind of structure and things working a certain way in the wheel, just kind of churning and going with the flow. But it ended up working out like a really good balance because where Pat was more operational, I guess I was more customer service oriented. You know, I could really kind of take the front end of the store and kind of implement ways to bring more dollars into it, putting a female touch on it because it was all guys. So they never had that female touch. It needed that woman's touch or woman's worth right in there. So it ended up blending really well. It was a great, great balance for both of us.
Let me just play a short clip from the show, Down Home with Anneli, so we can get a sense of what that blend is like. Here it is.
She wants a few more marshmallows.
Just a minute. They look
so
a little
scampi. So either a half a cup or a little more than a half a cup.
So you just kind of toss this all around together.
Oh, yeah.
This is going to be so great on top of that souffle.
Get the saltiness from the cashews, the sweetness from the coconuts, and the squeeziness from the marshmallows.
Yeah, I'll turn him into a crazy man. See how that balance came right? That balance came right into it?
Well, it sounds like you're both enjoying. We're talking with Pat and Gina Neely, co-hosts of the Food Network show, Down Home with the Neelys. Okay, so now let's talk barbecue. Who started with Pat? I guess you were the first in the restaurant business, so you started it off. Was barbecue kind of the core of the restaurant when you first got started? Was always going to be
always,
barbecue?
Always, always, and it's it's because of a couple of reasons. One, coming from Memphis, Memphis is always considered the barbecue capital of the world. I mean, you have some of the famous best barbecue that you're going to ever get anywhere in this country, right here in Memphis, Tennessee. And what I like most about it, I have to say real quickly, is that
you take meat from a very, very raw state and you season it with a spice that you've put together. And then you are going to cook it over an open flame and infuse it with smoke, whether it's hickory or apple or mesquite. And when you combine those types of ingredients and that technique of cooking, it's pretty incredible. I don't think that there's no other culinary cooking skill out there quite as unique as barbecue and smoking and grilling meat in an open flame.
I need to ask, though, Pat, though, are you going to give us one or two secrets? Are you one of those guys that leaves out some crucial thing so yours will mess up? So you will mess up and somebody's got to come to the restaurant.
You know what's sad? Down Home with the Neelys cookbook, our first cookbook was a New York Times bestseller. And our second cookbook, the Neely Celebration cookbook, has got all my secrets. I've given them all away. They're all in there. So you just have to pick them up. And when we were writing the book, I said, I can't believe I'm actually giving these secrets away. And Gina said, give it to them.
Can you give us just one thing for people? Because people who are hearing this will probably be in their kitchen, padding around in the kitchen and going crazy.
A great Neely's barbecue rub would be a tablespoon of paprika, smoked paprika, a tablespoon of sugar, and maybe a teaspoon of onion powder. Now, this is a great rub for your smoked meat that you're going to put on the grill, your brisket, your ribs, or your pork butts. Then if you're going to smoke some chicken, I would add maybe a teaspoon of salt to that rub as well because you want to flavor up the chicken just a little bit.
All right. Yes. Well, Queen, what you going to add there? I know typically the ladies are in charge of the sides. All right. Break it down.
I'm going to add some sides. Honey, let's see. Now, with barbecue, you got to have baked beans, spicy coleslaw, potato salad. My mom makes the absolute best potato salad. That's also in the cookbook called Mama's Jeans Potato Salad. I don't care how many potato salads we do, hers tops it.
So we got the barbecue going. We got the brisket, I assume.
We've got to have some pork ribs. And then I have to do some turkey or some chicken. And now I've even gotten a little fancy with our chicken. As opposed to just a barbecue chicken, I'll do a beer in a can chicken, which is a great recipe.
Excuse me.
You take a whole chicken.
Oh, my God, it's so good.
And, you know, I drank half of the beer in the can.
I was going to say, did you say how you got rid of the beer to put it in the
beer? The other half, and the chicken has been marinated in a great dressing and a great seasoning. And then we smoke it on the grill because what you want to have is something for everyone. I mean, Spencer, our oldest daughter, her friend is even she's a vegetarian, so we might even do some portobello mushrooms on the grill and some bell peppers and things of that nature. And then Gina just goes crazy with the side items, and we're pretty much good to go.
Okay, good to go. Well, we've been talking with the king and queen of barbecue, the Neelys, Pat and Gina Neely, restaurateurs, authors, co-hosts of the Food Network show Down Home with the Neelys. And they were kind enough to take a short break from their 4th of July preparations to join us in Memphis, Tennessee. Pat and Gina Neely, thank you so much for joining us and happy 4th
to you. Happy 4th of July, you guys. Enjoy.
Thank you. Thank you so very much.
Thank you, Michelle.
Un, dos, tres, cuatro.